That is suicidal behavior. The way money works will only take any advantage gained by conservation. I love people who drive Priuses, but even if everybody started driving Priuses tomorrow, it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference on where this crazy, out-of-control train is going. Besides that, let me just hit you with another little fact, because we have to change the way you think so that you can survive. Those of you who get it, get it. Those of you who don't, look, I'm going to say this right now. I'm going to say it very clearly, because I care about you guys. Let's assume we're all on the Titanic, which we are. And the Titanic has just been hit by an iceberg. You know, most people just felt a little bump. But some people were aware, and they know that the engineering of the ship, they scrimped on money, didn't put the bulkheads up high enough, eventually it's going to flow over and the ship's going to sink. Some of us are running around going, the ship's going to sink. Now, as the ship starts to show signs of a little stress, which the world is showing now, little signs of stress, you might say, there are some people on the Titanic who are saying, something's really wrong here, we need to do something. Now let's say you all are the people who actually know the Titanic is going to sink. And you're faced with the people who say, something's wrong, I don't know what to do, somebody help me, show me what to do. Then there's another group of people who are hysterical. Oh my God, the ship's been hit, and you try to talk to them, but they won't listen to you. They're in denial. Everything will be fine. Then there's another group that says, this ship is unsinkable, I'm going back to the bar for a drink. Which group of people would you expend your time and energy trying to help build life rafts? The first group, right? You can't expend your energy chasing the people who are hysterical, and you certainly don't want to be hanging on the ankles of the idiots going back to the bar for another drink, right?
Right.
You want to save as many lives as possible. Let's talk about cars for a minute and Priuses. All of you guys who want to have a palliative to make you feel better, we can go all buy Priuses. Right now on this planet, there are between 750 and 800 million internal combustion powered vehicles. They bring us food, they drive you around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Cars, planes, trucks, you know, not the John Candy movie, whatever it was. All right. But for every automobile, it takes 12% of all the oil that car will consume in its lifetime to make the car. Why? You got to mine the ore. How do you do that? With an oil-powered machine. You got to get it to a smelter. Then you got to cook it till it melts. All that's hydrocarbon energy. You got to move it down a production line. You got to form it. You got to shape it. You got to paint it. That's oil. 12%. There are 7 gallons of oil in every tire. So let's assume tomorrow that we had a whole new source of energy, cold fusion, which would solve all the world's problems. It wouldn't solve the fertilizer problem. It wouldn't solve the pesticide problem or the plastic problem. But let's say that infinite energy tomorrow. Okay, let's go out and build 750, 800 million new vehicles. You'll use up all the oil that's left. The plants don't exist. The factories don't exist. The infrastructure doesn't exist. Denial is not a river in Egypt. You must think about energy return on energy invested. Okay, so now we're in this crazy screwed up situation here where the world's thirst for oil and everything else is only making matters worse because everybody's realizing that the end is near. They're doing everything they can possibly do to get more oil as quickly as they possibly can. We might be able to connect that back to 9/11 at some point, do you think? Duh. Is there fraud in the House of Saud? Now, how many people think that the government of Saudi Arabia would absolutely never tell a lie about oil reserves? Good, good. And that's on MSNBC. Major stories everywhere that Gawar has peaked. As a matter of fact, three major papers have published stories showing that Gawar has peaked. Now, Saudi Arabia, being the largest oil producer and the real powerhouse of OPEC, has several times over the course of the last year, don't worry, America, we will come to save you, we'll pump all this extra oil. We've actually upped our production by 50,000 barrels, 100,000 barrels, 500,000 barrels a day. World's using 83, 84 million barrels a day. What the Saudis didn't tell you was that the only oil they increased production of was called heavy sour oil. You know, there are many different grades of oil, right? There's light sweet, there's Texas mid-grade, there's Brent light sweet, there's all these wonderful names. It's like going to a bar and pulling the bottles off, you know. Let me have the two shots of light sweet and some Brent crude and some, yeah. Okay, heavy sour oil is great if you want to make asphalt. 90%+ of the refineries on the world can't refine heavy sour oil into anything but asphalt. Do we need more asphalt? No, the world wants more gasoline. And the Saudis have been lying through their teeth. Yeah, well, and it's hilarious if you read the stories on a daily basis like I do. One day you get Sheikh Ali Naimi, who is the Saudi oil minister, say, we have more oil than the world will need for 25 years. 250 million more barrels, we're going to find, we're going to dump in money. Then the next day you got the head of OPEC saying, well, we really can't produce anymore. I mean, but now the Saudis blame it on the U.S. for not building refineries or the rest of the world. Well, now here's the key on that. The Saudis are definitely lying. I'm going to back up for a second, and we'll come to it, because I want to cover this now. Saudis are definitely lying, and they have to cover it up because Saudi Arabia is a slightly corrupt kingdom. They have, you know, several hundred princes who all siphon off tens and hundreds of millions of dollars a year. There's factions in between these guys fighting between each other, so on and so forth. The population is restive, and really the Saudi government has been able to keep using the carrot and stick approach. They throw out massive amounts of money to the population on social welfare programs, and then they have a ruthless internal security force. Once the Saudi population gets that the oil game is over, and Saudi Arabia is peaking, Saudi Arabia is in deep trouble. The kingdom is. The government is. Deep, deep trouble. Not only is the world, but the kingdom itself could go unstable. But again, 25% of the recoverable reserves on the planet are in Saudi Arabia. I covered this in a story in From the Wilderness in August of 2002. Saudi Arabia, the Sarajevo of the 21st century, saw all of this coming too, because we had the right map. Now, King Fahd of Saudi Arabia is about 115 million years old. He had a series of major strokes. His last, I think, in 96. I've got stories showing that he was on life support in Malacca, an island off the coast of Spain, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Yet the major press organizations still put out that, oh, King Fahd is doing this and King Fahd is doing that. And what I said was, when King Fahd dies, you watch what happens to Saudi Arabia. There's only one of two possibilities, because the two rivals for the throne, who are only like 50 million years old each, Prince Abdullah, who is the crown prince, and Prince Sultan, who is the second in line, don't like each other. And Prince Sultan controls the Saudi National Guard, by far the largest military force in the country, and Prince Abdullah controls the army. And they could go toe-to-toe and head-to-head, you know, knife-to-knife, to see who takes over the country. Abdullah doesn't like the U.S. as much as Sultan does, but he's the next in line. And I said, you watch when King Fahd dies, because that will be the start of what's probably going to be the Balkanization of Saudi Arabia, because all of the oil in Saudi Arabia is in a tiny little sliver on the eastern part of the country. And here is a story from just last week. Saudi king in hospital for tests. And it talks down up here, it says, having fluid in his lungs. Uh-oh. How many people have ever had a parent or close friend die? When the fluid starts building in your lungs, that means you're on your way out. So you watch Saudi Arabia very closely. Either Saudi Arabia will explode into a civil war shortly after King Fahd's death, or some kind of deal has been cooked. And we want to watch very closely. But Saudi Arabia is now increasingly unstable. And I'll show you why that's so important here in just a second. But we predicted this coming for some time as well. Now we come back. Saudi Arabia is now asking for $623 billion in foreign investment. First of all, how many people think that Saudi Arabia doesn't have $623 billion of their own? They're asking, thank you, Lisa, trying to save my life, hoping I don't trip over my computer case. They're asking for us to invest in Saudi Arabia so that they can fulfill their public relations pledge to go out and pour all this money into oil production to produce oil they know they don't have. But they want to blame it on us. But then, another story from Bloomberg, it says, OPEC states may link oil exploration to refineries. Now, OPEC is now quietly saying, Sure, we have enough oil for everybody, but why should we spend any money? Wait a minute, they were asking us to invest our money. But why should we spend any money unless the West and the U.S., and America in particular, starts building more refineries? Matthew Simmons summed this up correctly in a report in a report he wrote in 2001, connected with Dick Cheney's Energy Task Force. He said there ain't no more refineries being built, and there ain't no more energy infrastructure being built, and there ain't no more electrical power generating stations being built, because there won't be any return on investment. Right. You get it? If there's no oil and there's no natural gas to run the refineries, to sell to your cars, the cost of the refineries, I mean lots and lots of money, billions of dollars, is never going to get recouped, so nobody's putting up the money. So it's coming to a major showdown here. OPEC is trying to play a game of chicken with us, and this is going to blow up sometime in the very near future. And when that happens, the financial markets will really go south. Look at the U.S. refinery picture. This is from Bloomberg. There are 146 operating refineries in the U.S. with capacity to process 16.9 million barrels of crude a day, according to DOE. That compares with 324 refineries with a capacity of 18.6 million barrels in 1981. Wait a minute. The number of refineries has been declining exactly as the oil supply and production has been declining. Watch how these people spend their money. Don't watch their lips. Watch where they put their money. They aren't putting the money in refineries because there's nothing more to refine. The number of U.S. refineries dropped by half during the past 25 years is low profit margins, blah, blah, stricter, blah, bullshit. The last refinery built, I mean, come on, oil's $53 a barrel right now. You know, I've seen prices just touch $290 in California. You think they don't have enough? You think under those conditions they wouldn't have building refineries up the wazoo to refine more oil if they could? Of course. A new refinery would probably cost $2 to $3 billion, said John O'Brien, president of Baker and O'Brien. Baker? James Baker? These are such big bets in terms of investment that people are unwilling to take those kinds of risks, O'Brien said in a phone interview. Bush's proposal may help a bit, blah, blah, blah. So now we're seeing what the real picture is. There's no investment because there's nothing to do it. We've already done this. I don't know how that got in there twice. So where do we get our oil from? Saudi Arabia. Actually, Saudi Arabia is number three here. Canada, Mexico, Saudi Arabia, and Venezuela. Those are the top four countries from which we get our oil. Now let's look at what's going on around the world a little bit. Moscow News. Russia may stop exporting energy sources by 2010. Russia's hitting peak. Russia knows that their day is coming to an end. Vladimir Putin is pumping oil hand over fist. Russia had its first peak in 87. Then we collapsed the Soviet Union with economic warfare, and their whole industry collapsed. Now they're making money hand over fist, and Russian production is running out. They know it. They're going over peak. But not only is Russia going over peak, Norway is going over peak. Wait a minute. Am I hitting the back button or the forward button? Norway trims 2005. Norway, a founding member of OPEC. It's the fourth or fifth largest oil exporter in the world. Norwegian production is declining. Running on empty. Venezuela's production is declining. Hugo Chavez, who we're going to talk a lot about later on, is claiming sabotage. There may be some truth to that, but Venezuela has actually passed peak some time ago, so they can only pump for a little while now. Yours truly still on the stage in Cancun, Mexico, 6 weeks before the big blackout August of 2003. You know, the big blackout that wiped out New England and part of Canada, and I was tracking natural gas, because natural gas behaves like peak oil, except for it tends to go along and just fall off a cliff, because the oil is trapped in rocks, and so there's resistance. Gas just, that's what happens with gas. And I predicted the New England blackout by watching gas stocks, and knowing that no infrastructure was being built to generate more electricity in New England. 6 weeks before it happened, I called it. Remember the big blackouts we had in Italy and France, right? Huge blackouts because the infrastructure isn't being rebuilt, energy shortages. Well, this one just hit Moscow a week ago. This is BBC News. It was less than a week ago, I think. I have the date. But it shut down the whole city of Moscow, the stock exchange. Did you hear about that, by the way? No. shut down. And the problem was, no infrastructure was being built. So, crime probe, I love this. This is so Russian. Vladimir Putin says, they have major blackout. Okay, go out, shoot somebody, people will understand. That's good. Shoot somebody, put somebody on trial, blame somebody, everything okay. That's Russian. I'm serious. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to throw somebody in jail because the world's running out of oil. That's Russian. This is from Reuters. World blackouts may grow as investment stalls. That's what I'm telling you. But now let's go to one of the great prophets from right here in Oregon, Richard Duncan. And this man is worthy of great homage, and his partner Walter Youngquist, as is Jay Hansen and all the other guys who have been trying to tell the truth for so many years. The Olduvai Gorge is a place where, I should stand in front of this so you don't read it while I'm doing this. The Olduvai Gorge is where the first evidence of human civilization occurred some hundreds of thousands of years ago. At least that's what's known. He has a new paper coming out, which is a parallel to a follow-up to his first paper on the Olduvai Gorge. And he says, this electrical epidemic, this is what he's projecting now, based upon studying world developments. This electrical epidemic spreads nationwide, then worldwide, and by circa 2007, most of the blackouts are permanent. That's less than 2 years. Do I have your attention? Are permanent. The modern way of life is history by circa 2025. Emphasis added. Postulate 2 of the Olduvai theory states energy production per capita will decline exponentially from the cliff event circa 2008 to 2030. If that is true, then the population in the world's industrial nations, we argue, will go from about 3.3 billion in 2008 to about 0.9 billion in 2030, a net die-off of about 300,000 people per day in the 22 years from 2008 to 2030. 300,000 people per day in the industrialized world. Now, this paper is out for peer review. Any scientists in the room? Any academics in the room? You know what peer review is? That's where you put it out to all your friends, enemies, colleagues who all have academic credentials, and you let them pick at it, poke at it, criticize it, and if it comes back from them saying the same thing, you know you pretty well got it right. That's the short version of peer review. Okay? That's what I do with my research. I don't ask anybody to take anything I say. All my stuff is footnoted. Everything I've showed you here is documented and sourced. I can back up everything I say. This is serious. Dick Cheney, George Bush knew it was serious. Fueling America's dirt. Here's another clue. Tar sands. How many people have heard about tar sands in Canada? The whole world is now fighting over these tar sands in Canada. Them damn Canadians. This is a picture of tar sands. I wish I could blow this up. Okay, to put this in perspective, a 6-foot man would not even make half of the tire, half the height of one tire for one of these trucks. This is like 400 or 500 feet down. They scoop out this dirty, oily, tarry sand, which has bitumen tar in there, and they haul these, Alberta, they're just destroying the environment in Alberta. But it gets even better. Here's the irony. The way they get the oil out of the tar sands is they boil water with natural gas and spray the sands with steam. Now, Canada, you see, Washington, D.C. doesn't tell you that, well, Washington, D.C. puts it as like, U.S. only gets 15% of its natural gas from Canada. Yeah, but we take 60% of Canada's natural gas production. Because we're running out here. Something like 80% of all new natural gas wells drilled in this country are dry within 1 year now. Within 1 year. So Canada is now considering, because they realize they can't do this indefinitely with natural gas, they say, well, we'll just build 2 or 3 nuclear reactors to boil the steam, and that way everything will be okay. I once had this great conversation. I was in Berlin at the Peak Oil Conference in 2004, and I was talking with Yves Cochet. He's one of the green members of the French Parliament. And he said, France gets about 70% of its electricity from nuclear power, you know, and every month They take a truck full of plutonium waste away from each plant, and each one you hit with an RPG and you have a dirty bomb. So we have about 150 dirty bombs per month driving on French highways. If the whole world goes nuclear, can you imagine the fear there real terrorists would have? Gee. I can't keep this map up to date. Just recently, Congressman Roscoe Bartlett of Maryland, who was the first member of the United States Congress to discuss peak oil on the floor of the House of Representatives, cited some great research from a number of people. Yeah, let's give him a round of applause. Yeah, I think that's good. He used Matt Savinow's research. He used a bunch of people's research, but one of the things he showed was this map that I had made showing how the world just in the last 6-8 months is blowing itself up. For those of you who don't get it, 60% of all the known recoverable oil on the planet is inside that triangle, right there. 60% of all the known oil. And that's why you can't fit all these flames and rifles. And everywhere you see this Y, that's the symbol for the yuan. That's where China is taking all the money it's getting out of our trade deficit and buying all the investments and assets around the world that it possibly can. These are areas that are already having energy shortages right now. Bolivia, we should add. I mean, I can't keep up. Now we also have major flames in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Georgia. We've literally encircled Russia. That's deliberate with conflicts. We're brutally suppressing any kind of democratic activity in Kyrgyzstan on the Chinese border. By the way, the first two places the U.S. deployed troops after 9/11, Uzbekistan and Kyrgyzstan. Right there. Gee, do you think we had a clue as to what was going on? Yeah. West Africa is even worse. West Africa is critical because Nigeria is the fifth largest oil exporter. Angola is ninth in the world. There's lots of undeveloped oil in here, not hundreds of billions of barrels. But the key is, to go back one slide, it takes 6 weeks to get a drop of oil from the Persian Gulf into your gas tank. It takes 2 weeks to get a drop of oil from West Africa into your gas tank. When there's no elasticity in the supply chain, how quickly you can get that oil into a gas tank and refined is what's critical. And the world's getting ready to go to war all over West Africa. This is West Africa in the last 6 to 8 months. Now, you can go to my website, fromthewilderness.com, and you can see what all these symbols mean. Some very scary things is what looks to me like, and I strongly suspect, are outbreaks of man-made, bioengineered biological weapons. Okay, but U.S. military is building strong permanent bases in this region here right now, as well as in Afghanistan and Iraq and all over the region. So now we come, not my favorite magazine, David Korn writes for that magazine. David Korn's one of the guys who said I was a metal case. He said I was fired from LAPD for being psychologically unfit, which was libelous and also not true. David Korn is now writing the same stuff about 9/11 that I was saying 3 years ago. He is also a paid commentator for Fox News. At LAPD, we call that a clue. The rise of disaster capitalism. This is essentially what, when we talk about money, you will change nothing until you change the way money works. I keep saying that. The Rise of Disaster Capitalism by Naomi Klein. Now that somebody else other than I, Catherine Austin Fitz, have said it, I guess it's politically correct. It's more profitable. Let me just sum this up with one great cartoon here. And so, while the end of the world scenario will be rife with unimaginable horrors, we believe that the pre-end period will be filled with unprecedented opportunities for profit. That's the way the corporations are going to treat peak oil and you. You will change nothing until you change the way money works. Your phone is ringing. It's the Fing. Hello? My nickname at LAPD was Inspector Clouseau, and I am not going to tell you how I got that name. For those of you who are not subscribers to From the Wilderness, let me tell you how it works. The website's fromthewilderness.com. I support five incredible writers a whole bunch of activists, producers, filmmakers, DVDs, authors. I sell their stuff and I give the money back to them, etc., etc. And about 80% of what we produce is free. Our paid subscribers in our subscriber-only stories get first crack at the story for 30 days, after which it reverts to free status. That is not profit mongering on my part. I got to pay the rent. I got to pay these people. Got to pay the phone bills. But there are two stories that I wrote that were subscriber stories only. They are now free stories. Global Corp, for those of you who are new to From the Wilderness, which summarizes this. Basically, the end of this, as the world goes extinct, as the last human being dies, as the last species dies, as the climate collapses, the two remaining, the remaining accountant and CEO of the last global merger will say, "Hooray, we did it!" And that will be the fulfillment of their economic paradigm. Uranium's at a 23-year high. May extend gain on supply. Everybody's trying to go nuclear. Well, I got a couple of problems here. First of all, I don't like the radioactive waste. I don't think nukes are necessarily safe, but there isn't enough uranium on the planet to build all the plants that are necessary to generate the electricity we already get from hydrocarbon energy. Plus, they are so energy intensive to build reactors. You've got to use, I think it's 20 or 30, it's an enormous amount of oil you have to use just to build a nuclear reactor. You've got to mine the uranium, which is deep, you've got to refine it, you've got to truck it, you've got to build these many layers of protection, you know, blah, blah, blah. You burn all kinds of energy before you get a return on energy. Nukes are not the answer. Besides that, we have not seen a nuclear-powered hybrid yet. Don't hold your breath. Or electricity. I mean, most of the American people are so stupid, so ill-informed. No, I mean that, so ill-informed. I love the American people. I wish they could all wake up. That they, you know, I've heard people say, "Well, when the oil runs out, I'll just drive an electric car." Electricity is not a source of energy. You have to make it by burning some other source of energy. What? Something interesting, too, and this is very scary, confirming that the elites, the people that control your lives and your press and the food and the corporations and the pension funds and everybody else, are very aware of peak oil, because there's a rush on to start building wind farms. But there's a problem. They're only being built in rich neighborhoods. Uh-oh. I first caught this, and Michael Caine is one of the great writers at From the Wilderness. He was immensely significant to some of the research we did in Crossing the Rubicon. We clipped a story showing that Massachusetts was going to start a state program to start taxing the state of Massachusetts to build a wind farm off Martha's Vineyard. Now, the science of wind farms and electrical transmission means is that the user closest gets the energy generated. That's why there's a huge wind farm near Palm Springs, California. That's why wind farms are being built in close to some of the... Anybody been through Berkeley, near the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory, where all the wind farms are there? Taxpayer dollars are being sucked out of the population as a whole to build wind farms, which can only supply electricity to a small segment of the population who happen to be rich. Uh-oh. I really see a lot of people paying attention now. Look about right to you.
Eat the rich.
Soylent Oil. Let's talk about China. We wrote a story about September 2002, that's 2.5 years ago easily, saying that China was the end game. U.S. significantly raises China's oil demand outlook. It's going to be 33% higher this year than it was last year, or than they thought. Now, there's some scary numbers in this study and the next study. You know, I told you earlier there's 750 million internal combustion-powered vehicles on the planet right now. Everybody understands compounding growth, where if you grow 7% a year, the 7% you grow next year is on top of the 7% this year, so you pretty soon you're going way up the curve. By 2035, if China's growth doesn't slow down, there will be 700 million internal combustion-powered vehicles in China. Now, that's really good for the environment, isn't it? Of course, that's not going to happen. The Chinese economy will collapse long before that. But China's already having power cuts. They're burning coal. They're having a major economic collapse. So a lot of their cities have had major blackouts. A lot of their coastal cities, they don't have enough power. They're burning coal faster than they can get it, also good for the environment. They're having coal shortages. But China's out everywhere they can. There's China with that guy, Hugo Chavez. This is the Chinese trade minister, and there's Hugo Chavez. I love Hugo Chavez. I got to tell you, this guy got some big ones. And he, of course, you know, people who have seen my lectures over the last 3 years, for about 2.5 years, at every lecture I had this one AP story headline, and the headline on the story was, Chavez calls Bush asshole. Yeah. Because Venezuela owns the Citgo gas stations, right? Fourth largest supplier of the U.S. It only takes 2 days to get oil from Venezuela into your gas tank. Ah. And Chavez said, you invade my country one more time, you pinche gringos, I'm going to sell my oil to China, I'm going to cut you off. You know, and there is something incredibly powerful about Hugo Chavez. We're going to talk about him more in a minute, and I'll get there because I want to make that point. Der Spiegel, a very good German paper, has analyzed China, and I've got a bunch of stories showing that the Chinese economic growth is also like a house of cards. They got fraudulent bank loans, they've overextended, they got bad loans. They're running a bubble to grow the Chinese economy as fast as possible because they're hoarding the commodities, but they're also trapped in this economic paradigm. And China is not this huge powerhouse that you might all think it is. China's got horrible internal problems, both economically and politically and culturally and ecologically. So China cannot continue doing this forever. But one thing China has done is put a $200 billion worth of investment into Iran. Now, how many people think the U.S. is going to invade Iran? Iran. No. How many people think the U.S. might stage airstrikes with the Israeli government against Iranian nuclear facilities? That's possible. The U.S. can't invade Iran. And if the U.S. does, let me just tell you this in advance so you won't have to read my website. If you wake up one morning and you see that the United States has launched the military of invasion Iran, pack up your belongings, head for the woods, write your will, bend over and kiss your ass goodbye. You know why? The rest of the world cannot live without Iranian oil. China cannot live without Iranian oil. India cannot live without Iranian oil. Malaysia, Brazil, Western Europe, those countries can't live without oil from Iran. There's no place else to go to get it. We know how much oil production went up in Iraq after we invaded Iraq, right? That's a joke. Iraqi oil production peaked at 3.5 million barrels a day in 1990. We've been lucky to touch 2 million barrels a day since. And they're blowing up there was a pipeline in Colombia that the FARC guerrillas have blown up so many times that the locals call it the flute. It's the Cano Limon pipeline. Well, much of the Iraqi infrastructure now is being called the flute because it's been sabotaged so much. You think the Iranians will let the United States occupy their country? They'll scorch the earth. And China has put $200 billion into Iran. Russia's put about $50 billion. India has put about $80 billion into Iran. And what they've said very clearly is, United States, if you invade Iran, you're attacking us. The line in the sand has been drawn around Iran. So what's Iran doing? They're out cooking deals with Hugo Chavez and running all over West Africa. The world is turning on the United States. Big time. The Lilliputians are pissed off at Gulliver. And Gulliver is fat, sloppy, and lazy. But Gulliver still has some real nasty technology, a lot of weapons, a lot of bombs, and he's really mean. He's like a bad drunk. But, you know. So if we look at this, here's China. Okay, here's Iran over here. That's a big country, and Iran ain't nothing Iraq was nothing compared to what Iran is. They've had 20 years to get their poop together after the revolution. They're well supplied, they're well armed, good technology, good military. They can shut down the Strait of Hormuz there in a heartbeat. We aren't going to invade Iran, no. The world will come and it's over if that happens. Indonesia here, by the way, a founding member of OPEC, has gone into decline, and they've announced they will start importing oil. A founding member of OPEC has said, we're going to have to start importing oil within 5 years. Yeah, you're getting the picture now, okay? Here's Russian. We're going to talk about this in a few minutes. Just remember this. This is where the Russian Siberian oil fields are here. For about 2 years, Russia said it was going to build a pipeline this way. And the question was it going to go to Japan or was it going to go to China? Remember that. Japan or China, because we're going to come back to that. The second thing I want you to remember about this map is here are the Straits of Malacca at their narrowest point, about 2 miles wide, and 80% of all the oil supplying China and Japan pass through this strait right here. Critical. Currently. China, by the way, is now rushing to build a pipeline across Burma so that they can get the oil and just drop it off here and it doesn't have to pass through there. China understands what's happening. Oops. The Russian pipeline. Oops. The Russian. Okay, I wrote this story. It was announced last December, and it was a big bidding war because everybody knew there wasn't enough oil to supply both Japan and China. And Russia, remember, is going over peak. They're going into decline. We're playing musical chairs here. Last December, Russia said, we're going to build a pipeline to supply Japan. We're going out to Sakhalin Island or out on the eastern coast of Russia. Japan can get the oil. And I said, I don't buy this. I really don't buy this. Something's wrong. And what I wrote in here, in January of 2005, I said, no, there's something else moving under the carpet. That's the term that my dear friend Cynthia, Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney, God bless Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. By the way, Cynthia McKinney is one of the greatest heroes of the 9/11 movement, and it was the work and contributions and sacrifices of people like you all over the country that put her back in office. She said that to me. She thanks you, and I thank you. And she's probably the only person in Congress who's really got her head screwed on right anyway about everything. And she says thanks to everybody who supported her, and she is not forgotten, by the way. But anyway, this is the saying we use when there's really something nasty going on. There's something moving under the carpet. You know, what is it? That was hinted at by Japan's reluctance to celebrate until Putin hit them with his investment demands. What Putin said, sure, we'll build the pipeline in Japan, but Japan's got to put up, well, $100 billion to finance it, or $50 billion, whatever it was. This is far from over, and China is far from out of the game. I would not put it past Putin to use it to buy time with the U.S. Japan is our buddy, while laying the seeds for a collapse of talks and construction down the road. Say when the pipeline is built to the geographic point where it must either turn south or continue east. That's maybe 2 to 3 years away. And in the meantime, Putin's options remain open. Wouldn't it be nice to have Japan pay for that segment of the pipeline? China would love that. This is the end game of end games. There are no rules. That was in January. This stuff is disintegrating so fast that it all came to pass just this month, in May. China to get oil before Japan, Russian envoy. The Russians announced, well, sorry, Japan, you know, you didn't put up with the money. We're now going to supply China. Now, do you remember, like, 3-4 weeks ago when Chinese mobs were burning and attacking everything Japanese in China? And they said it was over textbooks? Give me a break. It was the Chinese government showing Japan in a heartbeat, we've got 1.3 billion citizens and we can whip them into an anti-Japanese frenzy that you won't be able to survive. That's what it was about. And it's also about this. These are some of the stories. Chinese attack Japanese targets in Beijing. China mobs rampage against the Japanese. Okay, but this is also what it was about. In 1998, China passed the Exclusive Economic Zone and Continental Shelf Act, which means that China claimed all mineral rights out to the Asian continental shelf. Here's the Asian continental shelf. There's Japan. Oh! Suddenly Japan and Korea have no mineral rights. Just last, I think it was October, a Chinese nuclear sub was chased out of Japanese territorial waters right here. Japan is considering dropping its pacifist constitution. Trust me, Japan can be a nuclear power probably in a week if it wants to. Build a bomb in a week if it drops its constitution. And there's Korea, which means China's claiming all this, and there are recoverable oil and gas reserves in here. Now, ultimately, and I will say this, and I say this over and over again, geography, whether it has to do with whether you live in Portland or Eugene or Ashland or Bend or Salem or Springfield, is going to determine everything. George Orwell had it right in 1984. But by the way, how many people knew that George Orwell was a member of MI5? He also worked for the BBC. Okay, but George Orwell created a world in 1984, which is a great book. I quoted that several times. 2 + 2 = 4. The freedom to say this is the most important freedom of all. That's what people like Mark do and what I do. We say 2 + 2 = 4 no matter what the government says. Okay, but Orwell says the world will 3-4 basic power blocks, all determined by geography. Japan will ultimately roll into China's power block. Korea will ultimately roll. All of this will, because geography will determine everything. And the U.S. understands this, and the world is already breaking along those lines. China reevaluation would hurt U.S. I already talked about the floating of the bond. Now Merrill Lynch is saying, hey, the Congress and the President want China to float their currency, but Merrill Lynch says that's going to hurt the U.S. economy. Why do they want to do that? We'll get there in a second. China moves fast to claim oil sands, and now China has also committed to $2 billion, $2.5 billion to build a pipeline from Alberta, central Canada, to the west coast, Prince Rupert Island, no relation to me, 1P, so that they can ship the oil from the tar sands to China. And they've also put about another $150 million, $200 million investment into a couple of Canadian tar sands companies. Now, if oil was plentifully abundant and easy to get, why would China be going there instead of to Saudi Arabia? Oh. I mean, if Saudi Arabia really had all that oil, China would just go there and throw the money at Saudi Arabia and say, here's the money, give us the oil. China knows there's no more oil to find. Conventional oil. Seattle Post Intelligencer, or the Associated Press. China is also facing severe water shortages, as is the whole planet. Water is a whole separate issue right now. Too much for Mother Earth. And this is talking about China's consumption of commodities and energies and goods and everything. It's actually overwhelming the planet. And one other story should be next in line. No, it won't. But it says that really two-thirds of the available resources on the planet have already been used. And there's not much left to find. This is a great story from the current issue of the Atlantic Monthly, How We Would Fight China, which lays out the battle plan of the end game, the levels and layers at which a war with China would evolve, and how we're planning to fight China, and we are indeed preparing for that at some point, although these people are so crazy, we could have a nuclear war tomorrow if we invade Iran, or Venezuela and Colombia could go, or Iraq could go, Saudi Arabia could go. Malaysia and Indonesia have actually been close to fighting over oil. Recently. So any one of these things could trigger nuclear conflict. It's not just about how we survive running out of oil, it's how we keep the lunatics from blowing up the whole planet before we try to address that question. B-2 bombers and F-15 fighters are heading to Angola, and Aegis ships are moving to Japan. We're really beefing up Pacific Command to be the next major global war-fighting command to fight China. That will be one of the biggest battles will be in the Pacific Rim, to contain China and its influence in the region. China and Russia, however, are holding their first ever war games. Ooh. A whole new alliance is forming against the United States. One of the names it has been given is called the BRIC Alliance, Brazil, Russia, India, and China. And then you can add Hugo Chavez, and we'll get to him in a minute. Chavez, gaining support across the region. Now, there is a hugely strong racist component to all of the U.S. control of the Western Hemisphere, especially for the last 100 years. God forbid a French-speaking black man named Jean-Bertrand Aristide should have succeeded as the president of Haiti, throwing the lie to the white supremacist U.S.-dominated Uncle Sam. And of course, Hugo Chavez himself has some black blood in him, as well as some Indian blood in him, or Native American blood in him. You know, and he is becoming a true charismatic Bolivarian leader who is uniting almost all of Latin America behind him right now. You know, and yeah. And this guy has got some huge, and he's embarrassing the U.S. no end, but there's a really fun part here. Chavez considers breaking U.S. ties. How many people have heard recent stories about a guy named Luis Posada Carillas? All right. One of the most horrendous, heinous, mass-murdering, terrorist, bloodthirsty, killing criminals ever to come out of covert operations in the CIA, who in 1976 blew up a Cuban airliner flying from Caracas, Venezuela to Havana, Cuba, killing, I think, 127 or 150 people on board with a bomb. Children, men, women, didn't make any difference. By the way, who was the director of Central Intelligence in 1976? George Herbert Walker Bush.
Poppy Bush.
Poppy Bush. Posada Carias was imprisoned in Venezuela. He mysteriously escaped in 1985. Those who went in the rigged game get stupid. He's been here in the States with U.S. protection, shooting off his mouth, making public appearances. Somebody complained. He got arrested. And now he's wanted for terrorism. He blew up airplanes. Wasn't 9/11 something like that? And the U.S. is now engaged in a war on terror to stop terrorism all over the world. And Hugo Chavez has this guy in the United States demanding his return extradition to Venezuela for trial and incarceration. And if the U.S. government refuses to extradite this CIA murdering asshole to Venezuela, then the war on terror is absolutely popped, gone. No credibility anywhere in the world. None. And if we do hand him over, I know that Hugo Chavez, now he could have been tried in Cuba, but you know, Fidel was very smart. Oh, I don't need him here in Cuba, you can just send him to Venezuela, you know. I don't want to make a stink here, we'll just let Hugo take care of it down there, yeah. You know, because they were out, the CIA, all the connections to Bush and Posada Carias. Posada was involved deeply in Iran-Contra. So Chavez is now threatening to break diplomatic ties with the United States if we don't extradite. He can humiliate this government, especially in the eyes of Latin America, and Chavez knows his audience. Now there's one problem, and believe me, Latin America is uniting, South America is uniting rapidly. Energy alliances are forming, Chavez is doing great things with Brazil with Chile, I mean they're all really getting their shit together. But there's one problem, is that there's a major Spanish-speaking country called Mexico, which the United States owns, which is part of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is part of NORTHCOM under U.S. military command with Canada. And, you know, so Mexico, poor Mexico. I mean, talk about a schizophrenic place to be, and Mexico is going to become a very strange place to be, I think, in the near future, because as the world devolves and as Latin America unites, Mexico will have to decide whether it's a gringo colony or a Latin American country. And I don't know how that is going to play out, but that's going to be nasty. So Mexico is a key place to watch as this global evolution unfurls. But Hugo Chavez literally has George Bush by the balls. Literally does. And the American government. And I've been writing about this also for years. We've written many stories about Colombia because now the oil companies, hopefully it's the next slide, Colombia, Venezuela, big oil is turning up the heat in the border region. There's a proxy war brewing between Colombia and Venezuela. Colombia is supplying all the world's cocaine and 60% of American heroin. 70% of the heroin in the world, 75% now comes from Afghanistan, but 60%, 50, 60% of U.S. heroin comes from Colombia under CIA control, where I think it was like 15, 20 soldiers from U.S. 7th Special Forces were just busted for using military flights to fly tons of cocaine in the United States. Gee, have I ever written about that? Anybody who knows Mike Rupert's story knows that we've been talking about that for a long time. So we got to watch South America. Venezuela is jittery with fear of counter-revolution. Now, what's amazing is the people of Venezuela, and not like the United States, where there's no major rush to enlist in the U.S. Army, in case you hadn't noticed, the people of Venezuela are flocking to join militias to defend Venezuela in the event of a U.S. attack or coup. All right? That's amazing. And that's a sign for me of moral correctness. But now we got more of these elephants coming at us before we go back to the 9/11 thing. And I've got about 30 more minutes here that I'm going to take a break and then we'll take questions. Have I exhausted all of you yet? Good. This is the other thing I want you to read on my website. You non-subscribers can also read it free, and then hopefully you will choose to subscribe so that we can hire more writers and get you more information and support more people who are doing this kind of work to keep you informed with information that will save your life, hopefully, as the world burns. I come up with good titles once in a while, don't I? This is about the economic condition of the world. World is on the brink of ruin. Now I'm talking about your pocketbook and the American economy. Fears for dollars as central banks sell U.S. assets. Central banks around the world have started to dump treasury bills in U.S. dollars. The dollar is going to crash very soon. It actually has been crashing. Now, again, the dollar's price has recently risen against the euro, but as you research that, you find that it's not foreign governments buying, it's these banks in the Caribbean, which are using the money, our looted money that's been moved offshore to buy the treasury bills to keep the economy from collapsing right now. I'm convinced the U.S. economy will start to go or go completely in the third or fourth quarter of this year. And since I'm batting about 800, you might want to take that serious. And I mean go big time. U.S. current account deficit may hit $900 billion next year. That's the trade deficit. China and all the countries who, they literally lend us money so that we can buy their, let's do a George Carlin thing, so that we can buy their shit. Okay? Americans have bought so much shit, they go, shit, I got no place to put my shit. But the problem is that the American consumer and the American market is so oversaturated right now, you can't buy any more gizmos, gadgets, whoopies, and doopies. You can't remortgage your house right now. You can't borrow any more money to buy any more things that you don't need and you've been conditioned to believe that you have. Over there in China, on the other hand, there's a whole lot of people who ain't got no shit that want your shit. They'll be happy to take your shit away from you, you know, and they'll shit all over your currency to get it. Okay? And the people that make money from selling those things will be just as happy to suck the money out of the Chinese as they have from you, as they drive you into bankruptcy and foreclose all the shit they lent you on credit that was based on shit anyway. Shit. That's the trade deficit. Of course, we have the budget deficit and everything else. But now, are you aware that GM and Ford bonds have been cut to junk status? So GM's on the brink of bankruptcy? Yeah, well, before you clap, think about the price. If GM, you know, branding has a huge value. The brand name Coca-Cola has enormous value, doesn't it? Whether you like Coke or not. The brand name Nike has enormous value, doesn't it? The brand name United States has enormous value. Do you remember the saying from the 1950s and 60s, what's good for GM is good for America? If GM goes, foreign confidence in this country, we need $2 billion a day in foreign investment to keep this economy from imploding right now. If GM goes bankrupt, you think that, okay, so be careful what you pray for. You just might get it. Now, here's a quick way to understand what GM's predicament is, because as I describe for you what the situation is with GM, think about it exactly the same way as it is for the United States of America. The way investors look at GM is stock shares are equity. That's ownership of a company. Bonds are debt. In other words, you promise to repay the debt, right? Okay, so you add up all the total of GM's bonds. And then you look at the market cap of GM stock. Now, market cap, oh my God, he's using one of those terrible economic terms. Oh my God, I don't understand. I got to act like I know what he's saying. Okay, market capitalization is easy. If you, what's your name?
Danielle.
Peña?
Danielle.
Danielle. Vous êtes française? Huh? Okay, good. Okay, if Danielle owns a company, we'll call it Total now, since it's French. If you own a company with 1,000, let's say 1,000,000 shares of stock, and the shares of stock, 1,000,000 shares, are selling for $10 a share, the market cap is 10 million. That's not hard to figure out. Multiply the number of shares times the share price. Okay? Easy. People look at GM's bonds, their debts, and they're looking at like two. I'm making up a number, but there's, you know, it's $150-200 billion, and the market cap is only $20 billion. The company ain't worth doo-doo. And that's where GM is right now. That's where Ford is right now. That's where United Airlines is. You know, they just took away their employees' pension funds. And that's coming with everything. Why? Airlines? 70% of all transportation fuel is oil. The economy's getting ready to collapse big time. And that's the whole picture for the United States. The trade deficit represents debts and bonds that are like $900 billion, and the stock value is only worth $100 million. That's why the collapse is inevitable. Buffett. Watch out for him. Prophet of doom. Okay? He's moved his money offshore, out of the country. Steve Gates has moved his money. Bill Gates has moved his money out of the country. The big money's already out of the country. They aren't going to lose nothing when the economy crashes. You, on the other hand, are being encouraged to mortgage your homes to 125% of value so that you can buy a second home on the promise that somehow you're going to get rich off of that, and then you can take out a third mortgage on that home to buy yourself a boat. How many people here own their own homes? Free and clear. God bless you. Get out of debt. You want my advice on how to survive the first parts of peak oil? Get out of debt, because they're going to make you a slave and you will have no options to move anywhere, do anything, go anyplace, change any part of your lifestyle except for become indentured wage peon servants for the corporations for pennies of slave wage money to pay off debts, because you can no longer get out from underneath them due to the new bankruptcy law, which just passed 2 months ago. Are you aware about that?
Yes.
And the corporations will determine how much you can write off, how much money you're entitled to live on, where you can move, and where you can work. Get out of debt. Around the world. Again, and here's another left-handed admission right here. Around the world, CNN money, the market is ugly. Fears of rising interest rates, record high oil prices, inflation, and slowing profit growth have put a major dent into stocks this year. But what was the right under the headline? If your portfolio is stuck with losers, you might want to add more international stocks, because everybody else is moving their money offshore. What they don't tell you is the international stocks are going to go too, behind peak oil. And when things collapse, what's left or what's worth saving in a world of peak oil that's overpopulated, they can come back and repossess and take your homes for pennies on the dollar. They can take your assets for pennies on the dollar, as long as that sustains itself. You know, there's been a whole right-wing propaganda, you know, and there's one guy, I'm not going to mention his name, who I have a problem with because his research can be flawed and he makes stuff up from time to time. I think his heart may be in the right place. But there's a whole lot of people on the right that have been warning about concentration camps. They're going to build concentration camps everywhere. They're going to come get you, and that paralyzes you, and you're afraid of that. They aren't going to build concentration camps. When the economy crashes and everybody's homeless, you are going to be the cheapest migrant labor force in history. It costs money to build camps. It costs money to have guards. It costs money to lock people up. You'll work for pennies on the dollar to feed yourself because you're starving, and you'll go wherever there's work. And if you die along the way, why spend the money on camps? Until you change the way money works, you will change nothing. Nothing. Full speed to another Asian meltdown. Yeah, send your money overseas to Asia. That's going to go 6 months after America goes, or a year after America goes. Housing bubble. I could go for hours on the housing bubble. I mean, Jesus. LA Times just 4 days ago, it's not a bubble till it bursts. Running out of bubbles. Paul Krugman of the New York Times really writes some good stuff from time to time. Paul Krugman does. I think he gets it. I think he would say a lot more. But then he has linked the bubbles and the economic stuff. Oh, by the way, lending standards plumb new depths. This is a great story from 321 Gold. And what they talk about is basically they're lending money to people who are brain dead. Just to keep, you know that there are three times more paper mortgages than there are physical properties in this country? Because they pool the mortgages and make mortgage-backed securities, which they trade like stocks. Sure, go out and invest in a house. It's a really good idea. Lending standards plumb to new depths. And then CBS Market Watch. Oh, yeah, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, the legislation has been laid to put them into receivership because they discovered $900 billion worth of fraud in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, two of the largest lending institutions. Paul Krugman, again, just from March 8th, the Debt Peonage Society. He sees what's coming. He sees what's coming. Very clearly, the economy is going to collapse. The financial, this is a great story, and I will get this put up on our website. This describes step by step how you're going to be rendered debt slaves. Now, peak oil, I mean, I'm going to close with a very dramatic thing about how we're kind of all trapped by our lives, and that's why the first thing I tell people to do is get out of debt, because flexibility is everything to you. Protecting your assets is everything to you. And there are two great sites that I recommend, and I make no apologies. I've been attacked for a lot of things. You go to my links page down at the bottom, Pinnacle Quest International. They've been attacked almost as badly as I have. There's so many bad. Catherine Austin Fitz and I have both lectured there a number of times. Incredible medical knowledge that can set you free about medical issues, financial issues. Go there. And here in Oregon, Southern Oregon Resource Center. It's about protecting your own wealth. You can about trusts, about things you can do to educate yourself so that you can move even to other countries and not have to worry about having access to your money. and you can keep your money out of the hands of Uncle Sam. That's the same stuff that the Rockefellers and the Fords and all those rich people do. They have the trusts and the foundations and all that stuff. You need that kind, if you have any assets to protect, this is the way you can do it, to use it, because I know you well enough to know that if you have food and you have money and your neighbor is starving, you'll feed them. Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Why is it on an airliner, they say, should there be a sudden loss of cabin pressure? Put on your oxygen mask first before you try to help somebody else. I'm a cop. I've been on the street. I've seen death. I've seen triage decisions. I've had to make one just recently. My father had a major stroke, and I had to pull the plug on my own father. Okay? These decisions are hard. Psychologically, spiritually, prepare yourself for those things, but also understand that you can be of no help to somebody else unless you are stable and healthy yourself. The bad guys will want to convince you that you need to be poor to be right. And some of the bad guys who pose as leftists and liberals and activists will make you feel bad if you're out of debt or if you're making money. Bullshit. There's a line, that one of my favorite spiritual truths of all time, and I've spent a lot of years studying spiritual matters, and here's one of the greatest spiritual truths I've ever heard. Climb down off the cross, asshole. We need the lumber.